Welcome, everyone, to the Planning Commission meeting of Monday, January 28th, 2019. If you all would stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Lynn.
Present.
Commissioner Maynard.
Present.
Commissioner
Present.
Miller. Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Vice Chair Smith.
Here.
Chair Fuller.
Present.
And now we come to the public forum. If there's anybody here who would like to speak on a topic which is not on today's agenda, now would be the time. There's anybody here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you give your minutes away to somebody?
Minutes away?
Well, in Santa Barbara City Hall, you fill out a speaker sheet and then you give your minutes up to the person that's doing the speaking.
Yeah, I think so. No. If you want to do that. But that would be on a topic that's on the agenda?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, this is just for items that are not on the agenda? Yeah. So, not seeing anybody?
We did receive one.
Oh.
Yes, Chair Fuller.
Right. Phoebe Mansour. Yep.
Chair Fuller, commissioners, staff, and guests, I'm here as a resident of Goleta Old Town and a business owner in Old Town. And I am here speaking on a topic that is going to be coming to you, and that is the retail cannabis. And I'm standing here before you as the first victim of the cannabis businesses. I was notified by my landlord several months ago that he was approached by a cannabis group that they were planning on paying three times what I was paying in rent, and he was giving me notice that I should expect to move. And not long after that, I was crying the blues to the landlord next door, who said, I'd never let that kind of business in my building. It's not appropriate for this district. And he invited me to move in. Most businesses will not be as lucky as I. And one of the things that people suspect, that there are 9 permits that have been pulled for cannabis locations in Goleta Old Town, is because the rents are cheap. But that is not the case. It's not that the rents are cheap, and I can testify that they have promised my landlord three times the amount. They've chosen Goleta Old Town because their primary customers are the lowest of low income residents, which is in Old Town. Additionally, they will artificially inflate the rents. So when my lease comes up, my landlord will say, hey, next door is getting three times the amount. I deserve that. So we're going to see an artificial inflation of rents. There's a whole host of reasons that having a mass of cannabis stores in Old Town is not a good idea. And when it comes before you, I hope you can do some research. I certainly can send you the information that I found. From a business standpoint, it's bad. For residents, it's also bad. And thank you very much for considering my comments, and I will be back.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right. Are there any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
Chair, there are no amendments or adjustments.
And now for the next agenda item. Madam Clerk, will you read it into the record, please?
Item A1 is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of December 10th, 2018.
Do we have a motion to approve or discussion on the minutes?
I'll move to approve the minutes for the meeting of December 10, 2018.
I will second.
I'd just like to note that I clicked on the link to the development impact fees, and it went to the Fire Station 10 staff report. So somebody might want to fix that link. It's not really noticeable in the minutes unless you click on it, though. So it can be done behind the scenes, I'm sure. Any other discussion or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
I'll abstain as I was absent from that meeting.
Passed unanimously. Thank you. Madam Clerk, do you want to read the next agenda item?
Item B1 is discussion item. It's the revised historic preservation project context statement.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. Good evening, commissioners and chair. It's been a while. I'm Lisa Prossy, current planning manager, and excuse me for my voice. I'm fighting a cold. And I want to also welcome the audience members. Many people in the audience recognize that they've spent many hours working with us on this document, particularly the members of the Barbaraño Band of Chumash Indians. We really appreciate and value the collaborative effort that we've all put in to this document. And this item this evening, our presentation is going to be a team effort. I'm going to start off with some introduction to it, and then I'm going to turn it over to Christine Lazaretto, who's our primary consultant with HRG, and then John Foster, who's with Greenwood and Associates, will talk about the archaeological portion, and then James Yee, who is the tribal chairperson for the Barbaraño Band of Chumash Indians, will also speak, and then we'll wrap it up and then turn it over to you for comments and questions. So as a refresher, community review on the draft context statement started in the fall of 2017. And then we worked through the fall and winter and brought the document to you last March. And at that meeting, the commission had a lot of comments and suggestions. And so we took it back. We were reflective and spent the past 8-9 months working through those issues and comments and suggestions that you provided to us. So the document before you tonight reflects those changes that we've made. Basically, the information and revisions that you suggested was to expand on topics such as the Santa Barbara Airport, the electronic and aerospace industries, immigrant communities, and influential women. We did expand the Native American and archaeological chapter to include stories and reflections from the BBCI, and as I indicated, Mr. Yee is here, and we'll speak with you shortly about that. We also removed much of the subjective language that was in the document, and then we also included a recognition of the city's adopted urban forest management plan. And as you know, the urban forest management plan is only applicable to city street trees. So the revised context statement has been available for public review for about 3 weeks, January 7th to be exact. And during that time period, we've received just a few comments, in addition to a couple comments from two of our planning commissioners. And what we've done is, before you is a list of changes. On the dais before you is a list of changes by to revise the document to reflect the comments that we've received. Some of them were just minor word changes to where we missed a word. And one in particular, which we'll do on page 84 and 85, is to expand the narrative in the post-World War II industrial development section regarding the oil and gas industry and its legacy. And I think with that, I am going to turn it over to Ms. Lazaretto, and then we'll wrap it up.
Thank you, Lisa, and thank you, commissioners, for having us back tonight. We're happy to be here.
That works better. Thank you. We're happy to be here to provide you an update on where we are with the context statement and what we've been working on since we were last before you in March. I think Lisa has covered
it's not here.
The broad points. Thank you. As she mentioned, we have a team of multiple consultants to address the specific areas in the document. So Historic Resources Group is our firm, and we're working on the built environment. And then I'm here with John Foster from Greenwood & Associates, who is providing the leadership on the archaeological section. And then we worked with Cy Carlberg and Carlberg & Associates on the tree study. This is a multi-phased project. So our first phase was to start with the historic context document, as that provides the framework for the rest of the project. So we are here with you, hopefully nearing the end of, or towards the end of phase one, and we'll talk a little bit about next steps later on in the presentation. And then we will move on to the second phase of the project, which is to work with the community on the development of a preservation and cultural resources ordinance for the city of Goleta. That will then inform a historic resources survey that we are working on of potentially eligible resources in the city. And then the final phase will be a rollout of that to the community and some education about what this all means to property owners and stakeholders and, of course, commissioners and decision makers. So some of this is repetitive from last time, but just as a reminder to everyone about what the goals of the historic context statement are and what we are working toward in this document. So it's meant to be a framework for evaluating potentially significant historic properties in the city of Goleta. And again, we're talking about built resources, potentially eligible archaeological resources, and then, of course, publicly accessible or public trees that are on public property. The goal of the context statement is to place those resources in the appropriate context, so things can be significant for a variety of reasons, and the context document sets out some of those in terms of context and themes that are appropriate to the city. There's certainly architecturally significant properties, but then things are important that are important for other reasons as well that reflect a type of development or are associated with an important person. The document highlights the trends and patterns that help us understand the built environment in Goleta. And it's not intended to be sort of a comprehensive narrative history of the story of Goleta. But again, it's supposed to be a framework that talks about the broad development patterns here in the city. So just to bring you up to date on where we have been so far. So we did three public workshops in 2016 and 2017. The tree study was before the PTAC in November 2017, and now we're back here at our second Planning Commission meeting. The built environment chapter of the historic context statement covers a general period of about 1785, which is where some of the earliest built resources started to appear in Goleta, through 1969. Again, its emphasis is on the historical trends and development patterns, and so those are within the document under this broad chronological framework, and we're looking at all property types, so residential properties, commercial, industrial, anything that is in the built environment that may be eligible under one of the development patterns or themes. As Lisa mentioned, we have been receiving comments from the public along the way. So during our first public outreach meetings, we received a lot of input and community feedback on the overall framework of the document and the general direction we were going, in addition to some specific comments about the narrative itself and some specific factual things and things that the community wanted to be sure were covered in the document. Those were incorporated into the draft that you saw last spring, and then since that time, we have been further refining the narrative to reflect additional input from the community. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to John.
Thank you, Christina. Chair and commissioners, my name is John Foster. I'm the senior archaeologist for our company, and what we did in our documentation was to go through all of the known archaeological resources within the city of Goleta. There are approximately 67 archaeological sites that we currently are aware of within the city boundaries. They cover an extensive area of the city of Goleta. And we also presented information on how the current CEQA evaluates the significance of these resources in terms of what is known about these particular sites, what is their significance, what is their integrity. So At least 22 of these archaeological sites are potentially eligible under CEQA as historic resources. There's approximately another 40 sites that we have inadequate information on. So most of these sites in the city of Goleta are village-type sites. They have an incredible amount of diversity of materials and complexity. We don't have the absolute date on all of these resources that are within the city, but they could go back at least as far as 10,000 years. And then, of course, then we get into the historical period where we have some historical sites from the Mexican and the American period as well, although those are relatively few. We looked at the integrity of the sites based on documentation that that is readily available, and we're able to find that many of the sites a portion of those sites have been partially destroyed or destroyed as well. So we looked carefully at those. Then as we wanted to, based on comments that we got from the public, then we brought in a local archaeologist, David Stone, to provide some additional background information that would help flesh out the context statement that we had prepared. And with his material, we feel like we have established a good baseline for understanding the resources that are within the project area. So, and then, of course, we got together with David Yee and his group, the BBCI, and listened carefully to what they had to say, and then got input into that, and which we think is a significant improvement in the document overall, so that they can have their words are with us in this document. And I think that is pretty new in California, where we have this as part of a context statement. I've done 15 context statements before. This is the first time we've used it in that regard. So we're very proud to have David in our group. And I'll turn it over to Dave. Or James, I'm sorry.
Good evening to the Planning Commission members and city staff, and also members of the general public, including our elders who are here. My name is James Yee. I'm the chairman of the Barbareño Band of Chumash Indians. I have some prepared notes that I'll be reading from. Tonight, I'd like to talk about our motivation to contribute to the historical context statement, the process by which our contribution took shape, and a little about the content in the current draft of the historical context statement. First, some information about who we are. Although the Barbareño Band of Chumash Indians formed in 2015 as a 501c3 nonprofit organization, our ancestors have lived in the Goleta, Santa Barbara area for hundreds and probably thousands of years. And that's the basis, really, for our forming our legal organization. And the goals of our organization are to unify our people, revitalize our culture, protect our ancestral lands, and share our heritage with the community, which is what we're doing in this statement. And in the words of my late grandmother, Mary Yee, she was the last native speaker of the Chumash language in the Goleta, Santa Barbara area. And she said, "Kiaka ika shishkaka hiitoshup okia nuna," which means we are the people of this land. And truly, we are the people of this land, and we've survived over 250 years of contact with the Europeans, and we're still struggling to make our voice heard sometimes over the noise of those who would like to keep us quiet, including those who might be able to profit from keeping us quiet as well. And in 2017, the city of Goleta, represented by Lisa, reached out to the BBCI and asked us to contribute the local Native American portion of the historical context statement. And first, our group was really happy because we think that the BBCI best represents the people who lived on this land for such a long time, probably for thousands of years. But at the same time, we really had no idea how we would be able to define in this document who we are, and more importantly, our connection to the land. So it was really exploring unknown territory for us as well. Looking back now, I can see that our first attempts were sincere but really clumsy, and I think you read our first attempts. Lisa was incredibly patient and helpful, and finally, she just asked us to tell our stories and thoughts about the land, including people and places, and not just the comprehensive, like, dry scientific history of the land that you can read in most any book or study about the Chumash. And I understand that the Planning Commission wanted this. You gave your input to go in this direction as well, and I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. So with these suggestions to just tell our story, the task seemed much easier because, of course, we're in a very good place, and especially I think the descendants of the Barbara Chumash that the BBCI represents are in a very good place because we're the descendants whose ancestors contributed most, if not all, of the knowledge and stories that we have documented about Chumash culture and language. So I think you came to the right people to ask. And with these, so with the suggestions to just tell our story, the task seemed much easier. But the stories came with connections to the land and connections to people who lived on the land. And they're really tied to feelings about how we were treated so badly and lost the land and lost just about everything else almost. So writing the statement was very difficult. It's a really personal document, so the draft that we are discussing or that you've looked at. And it's a story that really exposed raw wounds in our community. And I sometimes have the feeling that maybe this document will be exploited somehow, and people have kind of mentioned that, but I really thought that the story had to be told. So I wrote the scaffolding that kind of supports the structure composed of stories, and tribal members contributed their thoughts as well. And so the product that we're discussing or that's proposed is the end result of all that. And then second, I'd like to talk about the content in the current draft just a little bit. There's two parts. The first section's longest and details how we feel about the land and our connection to it through people, places, and stories. Some of the stories have been documented and published in other places. Other stories have been passed down orally. I mentioned to Lisa that I am prepared to give documentation details for stories that have appeared in other places. All of the stories in the statement proposed were told by Barbara and the Chumash ancestors. I did have to leave out some stories that I first believe came from this area, but later, after doing more investigation, I found out that they had roots in other Chumash areas, so those were not included. I wanted this statement to be exclusively Barbara and the Chumash stories. And I think that's a really important... So this statement is exclusively Barbara and the Chumash, not a comprehensive statement reflecting all Chumash peoples. And that's a really important point because there are different Chumash tribes, and we are speaking only for our people, the Barbara and the Chumash. Because I believe we would never conceive, or I personally would never conceive, of going to another Chumash area and pretending to speak for them, because I'm Barbara Eno Chumash, this is my land here. I wouldn't go to the Obispeño or the San Ynez and speak for them. And then the second section gives a short summary of cultural resource management related opinions of the BBCI regarding the cultural resources landscape in the city of Goleta. And this section was not meant to be a detailed and very exhaustive description of cultural resource management issues. You can probably find that the experts write those things up. But this is just, that section is kind of just basic, our basic feelings about the archaeological portion. So thank you very much for listening.
I don't know why I can't remember that. The third chapter of the context statement is the tree study, and that was prepared in the same framework and with the same timeline as the other chapters. So it's been reviewed and vetted by the public, and as I mentioned, it went to PTAC, and we received some additional comments based on the Planning Commission here last spring, and those have been incorporated as well. And as Lisa mentioned at the beginning, there's also updated language in there creating a larger nexus between that and the urban forest management plan. Next.
So just...
No, go ahead.
No, you go.
I can't remember if I have one more slide.
Oh, you do.
I do. Although I think I'm going to turn this over to Lisa to talk about, but I just wanted to summarize a little that I mentioned that we were in the latter stages of phase one. I apologize if you're getting feedback from me. In the latter stages of phase one of the project, so with a blessing here tonight, and we know, and Lisa passed out to all of you, some additional corrections that we will make in the document before it goes forward in the process. Any additional revisions will, of course, be also published on the city's website so everyone can see them. And if there are additional comments that come out of this meeting, we'll be making further updates to the document. And then we'll be going to council sometime this spring. And then after that is when we launch into phase two, which will be the development of the ordinance. And I think Lisa's going to talk a little more about the next steps.
Thank you. Just a little bit. As Ms. Lazaretto mentioned, you know, or as if you can get the idea, this, you know, the context statement is to give us the broad brush and to establish the baseline so that as we go forward to the next steps, which is really where a lot of the meat is going to happen of developing the eligibility criteria and the review process and the ordinance with the regulations, you know, we need to have the common baseline, which is what the purpose of the context statement is really is about. So those will be the next steps, and we hope in the spring to be here before you after we get the City Council to accept the document. We are just asking tonight for your comments on it and hopefully your acceptance of it. And we're not actually asking you or City Council to adopt it, because when we finally have the ordinance developed, the context statement will be part of the ordinance itself with the eligibility criteria in there. So it's kind of it's all going to be part of a bigger document, you know, hopefully later this year. So that's why we're just asking for your comments, and hopefully at this stage you can accept it and pass it on to council. And then you know, so as we go through the ordinance process, there still will be opportunities to modify it and finally have it adopted when we do the ordinance. So with that, that concludes our presentation, and we're all available to answer any questions.
So I will start with other questions from the council on the from the commission on the staff report. Yes, Katie, Commissioner.
I just have two questions. One, Mr. Yee, have you seen a copy of the running list of changes?
I believe I have. It might have been an earlier list.
Could someone pass him a copy of what went to the commission? So I had a particular question about the comment for page 150, and it says, if acceptable to the BBCI. So I was curious if you could speak to whether it's acceptable to the BBCI. Change the second bullet point in item 2 to read inserted language. So it says, local Chumash continue today to carry on the stewardship of preserving cultural sites, features, and landscape as out Chumash, as I think that should say our Chumash ancestors had for thousands of years. And our ancestral sites are disturbed and destroyed. Our lasting legacy of having occupied these homelands will be lost. Therefore, for consultation with BBCI, and then the addition is, and other local Chumash people as needed, can be an important tool to understand the impact of development on cultural resources in the city of Goleta. How do you feel about that change?
I would have to go back to our council and talk with them to see if they accept the change in language.
Thank you very much.
Oh, sure.
And then I have one question for Chair Fuller, which is just as we go into the public comment period, is it appropriate for somebody who's in the audience to cede their 3 minutes of time to another person if they wanted to give that time?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that might have been what was being asked about before. So you may cede your time then to another person.
We want to make sure that everybody has an appropriate amount of time. Right.
Thank you for doing that, Chair.
Any other questions? Yes. Commissioner Lynn.
It's not a question. I just wanted to thank the staff for incorporating oil and gas history There's a letter that I wrote, and the industry has had significant impact and still does in Goleta, and I'm glad they're going to add that in the little updated industrial section. So thank you, staff.
It's part of our history.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments or questions at this time? So we'll open it up for public comments. If you want to pass any comment slips or speaking slips you have to the clerk, it would be greatly appreciated. And then do we have any people to speak?
Yes, Chair Fuller, there are two speaker slips.
Okay. So we'll start with Dr. Ingeborg Cox.
I thought I was going to be the last one.
You're on top.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, commissioners. What I want to find out is the Central Coast Information Center for European, for in my opinion, is not the only source of information regarding prehistoric sites. Did I overlook it? Or I did not see a mention of the Native American Heritage Commission Sacred Lands file, because a search needs to be done with the Native American Heritage Commission Sacred Lands file to see if an area that was impacted before by Chumash, if they say, yeah, it's okay for you guys to dig, or no, it's a sacred area, you should not dig any further. And there are lots of areas in Goleta. So you would be saving the developer money if this would be one of the indications that it needs to be done. I also have not come across a complete list of historic resources of Goleta. There was a partial list listed in the September 2006 at the Goleta General Plan / Coastal Land Plan. I inputted that into my letter to Lisa Prasse on November the 1st, 2017, and I also sent another letter on December the 5th, 2017. If for whatever reason those letters were misplaced or you have not seen them, I have them here with the stamp of the city of Goleta. And like you just stated, I also feel that oil and gas facilities that are in the area, were in the area, that have been removed, need to be addressed. This last week, when it was after the king tides, I went to walk on Haskell's Beach, and the supposedly pipelines or the piers that were supposed to be removed, they are still there, and it's a danger to people that don't know that these areas exist there. Thank you very much. Right. Do you need this?
I think no, we don't. We have them. Thank you.
You have them. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, thank you. Next is Fermina Murray.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to express my deepest gratitude to the BBCI and all the elders here who have come forward and bring the city their words in their words. I think this is a huge blessing. Speaking from an indigenous point of view, this is huge. It is bigger than the United States. For indigenous people to put their words into a government document, the government of the United States. You know, I am from the Pacific Islands, and we have similar struggles all through. And none of our indigenous documents ever make it. And so this is just I feel like the whole nation should be celebrating, and it's just a tremendous blessing. And I have I just feel so proud of our city and our reaching out, and then of course the BBCI able to honor that request and come forward. And I'm just hoping, requesting that all the faces that are going to come in the next one, when you start to do the preservation ordinance and all those, that they will continue to be working with us. Because I think we are setting a role model for the next 12 years when the planet is really in the crisis. And this is one of the ways that is shifting that paradigm of dealing with the planet and starting from here. So I'm just speaking from the heart and just gratitude for the elders. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your kind words. Our next speaker. Ernestine Ignacio de Soto.
Can you hear me? I don't know, I'm a little bit short. I guess I'm mellowing with my age, but I've been embroiled in these battles since 1966. So I have a few scars. But I want to commend my nephew for his your leadership for one thing, but like my cousin said, you're so good, you're good for nothing. I can't let that go, only because he is, you know, not for nothing, but he's good, and sometimes that does get you. But I do want to commend all of you because. I've been at this battle with Santa Barbara City and County, and I'm sure they could learn something from you. And I just want to add, when in his historical accounts, not only are we the people here, we're not just saying we're the people here. We're actually documented, DNA'd, genealogically, in the mission, in the museum, in Smithsonian, in just about every university and books, you'll see my mother's name. And unfortunately, I don't have her linguistic ability. Thank God my nephew does. But so I just applaud you for this and hope that you'll be the shining example and star, and the rest of them have missed out, because we would like to be recognized. Come back, teach, and hopefully have, in my nursing terminology, an IND. We're just going to incise the wound and drain it all out. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anybody else wish to speak and make a comment at this time? I'm going to make one little, oh, yes, do we?
No.
Okay, thank you. I'm just going to make one comment in my thought that if we could have as in-depth a bibliography as possible of references for the history of Goleta and or other source materials, as well as for the local Barbarino tribe, any and all references to any written material, you know, or even recorded information as in oral. It would be great to have that as also referenced in this document available for anybody who in the future reads it will have more than just this document as a source. And like you said, it wasn't meant to be a comprehensive history, but that doesn't mean that we couldn't include references to more detailed and in-depth history, if that seems like a good idea. Thank you. So I'll close the public comment section, and I guess we're not making a vote on anything here, so.
You're not, but if you want to, I don't know if people have anything they want to add or.
Yeah, anybody else have anything they want to add?
I do, just two things, a couple things. We do have a bibliography. It's about 20 pages long.
Oh.
So. But we can look at it and expand it as needed.
And if there's any other available, Barbarino tribe, references that can be obtained, we'd like to have those in here.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And then two things about what Dr. Cox mentioned, the sacred lands file requests. We do that with every project that is a discretionary project. When we are required to contact the Native American Heritage Commission at the start of the CEQA process to get the latest list of Native American tribes. And one of the things we, so we can have consultation, and one of the things we ask for is they do a sacred lands search.
So this is already a law?
It's already, yeah, it's already a law. It's already a part of our practice. So that, and then, I mean, she did ask for the complete list of historic resources. The only list we have presently is in the general plan, but as part of this process, we will be coming up with that list. But first we need to come up with the eligibility criteria, and then based on the survey work that HRG does, then we can come up with the list.
So that'll be a further development.
That'll be a further development, yes. So I just wanted to share that.
Commissioners? Okay. Yes. Commissioner Maynard.
So a couple of comments. Overall, I'm just very impressed by the team that put this together.
I'm very impressed by the team that put this together. I had the experience of being able to both read the first one and the second one. You've added quite a lot in the new version. I really appreciate that. It was really heartwarming to hear all the public comment tonight. And so this is a document that makes me feel proud for the city of Goleta. So thank you for your hard work there. I did a little bit of searching around to see if I could find any additional history around some of the farm workers that are here, and I found it very difficult to find additional history. So I don't necessarily have something that needs to be added at this moment, but I just want to note that we're in an incredibly important agricultural area. We've talked a bit about some of the ownership of the different farmlands and the types of agriculture here, but as we're thinking to the next, as we go forward in this process, just kind of being mindful about thinking about farm workers' history here as well. But I think you all have done quite a lot of searching to try to fill in some of those gaps. And unfortunately, over our history, so many stories have been lost. So that's something that I noticed. The other piece, I had included this in my comments, some of the edits that I had sent in, is that it does still sort of feel like there's these three different sections of the document. There's sort of the European settlers' history, and then there's the section written by the BBCI, and then there's the archaeological section. And the three sections don't necessarily always talk to each other. It's three very different perspectives. And so anything we can do to integrate those and to have those talk more to each other. And so one thing that that I added in my comments was just a minor edit, but where it refers to, and I apologize because I don't have a good language sense, so I'm probably going to pronounce this incorrectly, but Mezquitan, what was called by the Spaniards is Mezquitan Island. I suggested that in some of the other areas that we also call it by its Chumash name. Just as a way to integrate some of that, because there was such a beautiful section in the BBCI section that talked about the importance of language. And so if we can integrate some of that language when we're referring to those sites and other sections of the document, I think that would be helpful. That was my only observation. So otherwise, I'm very supportive of this document.
Okay, thank you. So we'll move on. Thank you all for being here on this document, and we're gonna proceed to the director's report.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just one moment. So I have a few different notes to share with the commission. One is last week, we had a very successful workshop with the City Council concerning the pending cannabis general plan amendment and ordinance, and we received some good direction from the council on, and confirmation of our direction on where we're going with that work. The general plan amendment and ordinance will be coming back to the commission in due course for your consideration and recommendation onto the council. So stay tuned for that. Also, I wanted to note that there is a Planning Commissioner Academy from March 5th through 7th. We have a due date for applications of February 12th. However, that those dates, March 5th through 7th, will conflict with certain of the new zoning ordinance proposed workshop dates, and so far we haven't heard any interest from commissioners in attending the Planning Commissioner Academy. So at this point, we assume that there will be no one attending that. Next, I want to just briefly touch on the Planning Commission appointment process. As you're aware, there are three seats that are presently been termed out, and the City Council is planning or anticipating a special City Council meeting to interview candidates for all positions, and we hope to have confirmation or ratification of new appointments by February 19th, which happens to be the date of our first joint City Council and Planning Commission workshop on the new zoning ordinance. So we do ask that all planning commissioners currently serving continue to serve until all appointments are made. We don't know what those appointments will be, and we're hopeful again that we'll have those appointments before we launch into our new zoning ordinance project, but we'll see how that plays out. So lastly, I want to invite the Advanced Planning Manager Ann Wells to talk to the commission. We have a major work effort ahead, as you're aware, with our new zoning ordinance project. That's going to involve a lengthy workshop process, and I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. It's the meat of what we're all here to do. It doesn't get more planning wonkish than a new zoning ordinance. However, it is going to be a big work effort. There's a lot of material that we're going to need to work through. And so Anne is going to talk to us about what that process looks like and what the scheduling considerations are that we should take into account.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. As you all know, whether you are on the commission or not, we've been working on the new zoning ordinance for a few years. It's been quiet recently. We did have 33 public meetings, workshops, stakeholder meetings, Planning Commission meetings, City Council meetings, and all of those meetings are informing the revised draft zoning ordinance. So it's a lot of materials. We're planning on releasing it this week. And accompanying the revised draft zoning ordinance will be a key issues guide, and that will walk you and the public through the biggest topics that we discussed and how we resolve them. It will also compare the previous draft that you reviewed with the current release, and also with we'll go a step further with it and compare it with our current practice or our existing regulations, so that we can go full circle and you can really understand what we're proposing. Also, we'll have a track change version of the draft zoning ordinance, so you can see literally where things change. It's pretty hard to read, and so I'm going to explain how we're going to do that in our open houses, because there are a lot of changes. And then there's a response to comment table that is very long and detailed. So we took our response to comments very seriously, and we want to reflect that in that packet that's going to be released this week. So we're ready to take the project across the finish line. And our schedule for finalizing the new zoning ordinance, as you can see on the screen, does include back-to-back workshops. And I wanted to take a second to talk about the value of workshopping in this format. First, a lot of the heavy lifting has been done. So the initial crafting of the code over those 33 meetings is done. And that has set us up now to really focus on those key issues like fences or signs or lighting or permit process. The memories of the material when you have back-to-back meetings are great. The continuity is really good. That feeds right into the next meeting. And you can actually get a little bit more done because of that. It builds momentum. And then we also avoid the regularly scheduled Planning Commission meetings that often have other items that bump things like the new zoning ordinance workshops, which are really hard on the schedule. We've already experienced that as we're trying to schedule the workshops happening, so on one of the first meetings. And then the way the schedule is outlined, we avoid holidays and school days off and summer break. So we have some restrictions on our workshops to honor our public and their schedule, and this is the perfect time for workshopping. And probably the best is that we deliver the city's first new zoning ordinance that's consistent with our general plan and something that we all really, really want and are excited for faster. And without losing the value of the details, because again, we have really ramped up into this place of being able to workshop key issues and then take the zoning ordinance to hearing for adoption. So we feel confident that we're ready to do that. So let's talk a little bit about what that sequence looks like. We release the draft, and very soon, next week, start open housing so that we're available to the public to walk through the materials. So we'll have staff in this room, and we will have consultants, we'll have computers, because the track change version is a little bit hard when you look at it on paper. So we have computers set up so that we can guide interested parties through and, you know, go issue by issue, whatever those might be, and talk basically about what those key issues are in the general framework so that we can get the public back into the materials and start reviewing it. And then we have our joint City Council Planning Commission workshop on February 19th, and that's in the evening. And then we have those seven Planning Commission workshops starting in February 25th. So you can see on the screen, and I think you've received emails about some of these schedules as we were drafting them. If we were to do it like this, which we hope that you will engage in this process with us in this format or something similar to it, we would then be able to get to hearings in the May timeframe, which would get us to City Council in June. And the reason that you'll hear us emphasize June is because then if we miss June, then we go into summer where we go dark. And it's a big gap. And things happen. Regulations change. And all of the, I mean, not that we don't feel rushed to do it, but we do have seen a trend where we have these long dark periods, and it can challenge big projects like this that have been multi-year. So that's the thinking behind this. We know that, you know, all great plans are subject to change. So we thought we would start here and use this director's report to kind of launch the proposal and hope that you can work with us on this. And I think unless... I wanted to mention that the way we're structuring the workshops isn't how we've done it in the past. It's a little different, and I think it's a little bit more targeted. So there are topics such as permit procedures, parts one and two. So we really spend a lot of time with permit procedures because we think that that's really important, and there was a lot of public comment on it. So we feel like we need to clear some things up on there and make sure we got it right and fix it if we didn't. Open space, height, floor area, fences and hedges, outdoor storage, environmentally sensitive habitat areas, RV parking, parking reductions, signs, lighting, community assembly, housing, mobile vendors, accessory uses, energy. Those are some of the topics that we have for our key issues. They'll be expressed in a key issues guide that will accompany. So each workshop will have its own little set of key issues, and then we'll review them at our workshop. So I hope that makes you excited that, like, this is some real planning here, and we're closing in on the finish line for the new zoning ordinance.
Commissioners Miller. Thank you for that explanation. That was helpful. The open houses, are each of the four open houses unique meetings? In other words, are they all repeats, just providing different time settings for people to attend?
Great question. They are repeat.
Okay.
So we're here available and accessible at various times. So that's why you see daytime during the week, evening, okay, and Saturday, so that we can get different people in our community to make sure that we're accessible to them.
Do you recommend that we attend one of those?
Sure. Yes. Please come in. I mean, we're not doing presentations or making decisions. We are truly just sitting at the table, opening up documents and explaining things and helping people understand what's what, and maybe guide them to what's the most important thing for them. Because regulations can be very flat, and so we hope to give it a little bit of life and have it give it some context.
So you're going to give like a generic description of what the document is and what's in it and that sort of presentation? But it's not really a presentation.
There's no presentation, okay. but some people are going to come in and they're not going to be sure what they're going to know what their issue is, but they don't know how to translate that into the regulations, and we're going to help them do that so they can see, yeah, they can understand the materials.
So it's more of an individual one-on-one type event.
Yes.
Okay.
But if groups come in, we'll take groups too. Yeah. It's what the public needs. We're here to help them.
Okay. Yeah. Commissioner Mayer.
I'm planning on going to 3 of the 4 open houses. I went to those during the first zoning ordinance process, or several of them during that process. I found them really helpful as a planning commissioner, because at each one I met different people from the public and had really good conversations with them about their thoughts on the zoning ordinance. And I learned a new thing every time I went to one. So I'd encourage you to try to go as many as you can.
Okay.
So we've got the key issues. And then we've also got the various chapters. So will the workshop components go through key issues? And then when do we do the chapters? Can you talk through kind of how that's going to be divided up?
So each workshop will have, as soon as we get the dates locked in, then we'll release the schedule with the topics.
Mm-hmm.
But the process and the workshops will be going through the topics and resolving providing you with information about those topics, getting your feedback, and then resolving any outstanding issues related to them and anything else that that is within the framework of that topic area. So it doesn't necessarily go part by part of the draft, because that's very linear, and some things you have to bounce back and forth. And so we want to be able to bounce back and forth so we can really cover all the parts of a particular topic.
So when in the process would we cover the things outside of the key issues?
We have the last workshop is remaining issues and general feedback. So we did reserve one.
Okay.
And so we did reserve one entire workshop that was open.
Okay. I have to be honest, I have substantial concerns about the way that this is laid out. The most consistent piece of feedback that we received the last time we went through the zoning ordinance is that the public wanted us to go through it slower. They wanted to have time to read the sections, to really look at. I was just so excited earlier when you were talking about your comparison document that's going to have the existing regulations with the last version and the new version. There's going to be a track change version. And this is many, many hundreds of pages in addition to those comparisons. It's going to take a lot of work, not just for the Planning Commission, but for the public to go through those documents and really understand that. Only 2 of us were involved in the last zoning ordinance process. And should we get elected again or appointed again, I should say. But if we get appointed again, there could be less than 2 of us that were involved in the last process. The politics of the Planning Commission, the City Council are drastically different than the last time we went through this. So this feels really, really fast. And I can make this happen as a planning commissioner. I can be here for all but one of the workshop dates. But I think we're going to lose the public in this process. And I don't think we're listening to the piece of feedback we heard most consistently during the last zoning process, that they wanted time. The February 24th to 28th is at best 4 weeks of work in a single week. You'd have to get a babysitter every single night of the week if you've got a family. I can't imagine most members of the public being able to be here 4 nights in a row. That seems like a lot to ask somebody from the public, in addition to all the reading that goes behind being at 4 packed meetings in a row. To put everything other than the key issues into one single meeting, that just feels, I can't imagine getting through that much in one night. This to me feels, I'm really worried about the public reaction to how much we're trying to cram in such a short period of time. I recognize the reasons for doing it, but I don't think it'll be received well by the public, and I'm very concerned about it myself.
I have a question for you on that. Are you suggesting that we have more than 7 workshops, or are you, or is your concern about this the back-to-back nature of the structure? So just taking the same 7 workshops and spreading them out over a greater period of time, and then we would have that. Mm-hmm. We would take it out into June, when we're also mm-hmm. the others. So we would go into June and then go dark. Mm-hmm. And then come back in, I mean, that might push yeah. us, start pushing us closer or even into 2020, which if that's what you collectively want, then that's what we can do.
I would push very strongly for a maximum of one workshop a week, because I think, again, for me, I can spend the extra time doing the reading, but for the public, I think it's too much to cram in a single week and be prepared for that. We have a lot of community members that do come to multiple different workshops and have interests, broad interest across multiple areas. So I think one workshop a week would be something that I would push for. You speak about going dark in the summer, but 4 workshops in a row, back to back, day after day, most folks aren't going to be able to go to all 4 of those, and so you're essentially going to be dark on 3 of them. And so you're going to have to choose your favorite issue out of the week and skip the other 3 and have to give up your public comment on those days or try to write it in. So I think we're losing the public either way, even if we go, like, I'm not sure we're gaining more of the summer by gaining more of the public by avoiding summer. I think you're losing the public by trying to cram in too much. So you're sort of losing it either way, in my opinion. So I know this is important. I know we need to get this done soon. I've been eager to do this. This is one of the first projects I got to work on as a planning commissioner, and I'm about to time out of my first term. I really wanted to finish this before, so I'm hoping I get to come back next year and finish this. But we got to do it right. And I just think we're trying to push it too fast.
Any other comments from commissioners? So I'll have a little here. You're going to release the draft on January 31st, and the first open house is going to be on February 4th. So people are going to have essentially 4 days, if they have, you know, even realized that this is being released, you know, to review it. And this is not a document that is easily reviewed in 4 days, especially by the general public, I don't think. I agree with Commissioner Maynard. That was probably the number one consistent comment throughout our hearings, was that we were rushing it. And we took considerably longer, I believe, considerably more time going through the ordinance on the first cut. I would almost suggest that you release this schedule as a proposed schedule and look for public comment on it and see what the public has to say before we even, but you know, you're talking about starting next Monday, right? I mean, first open house is next Monday.
Right, so the theory behind that was we were not expecting people to review it. We were making ourselves available to help them review it or sections of it and guide them through. So it was not, not giving them 4 days to review something. And maybe I should clarify, if you're...
Wait, hold on, just a second, please. Uh-huh. Second, please. You're going to ask people, you're going to be available to clarify things that people haven't even had a chance practically to go through and find out what they have questions about. So, you know, it's not so great to have a workshop for things that people aren't aware yet that they have questions about.
Chair, if I may just add something. I mean, one of the benefits of the open house, especially for people who are not steeped in planning, is that they can come and talk to people who know the document and ask questions and really get their way into the document. So I don't think the open houses necessarily assume a familiarity with the document. It's a way for people to get familiar with the document to begin with, where otherwise it might be inaccessible. So there is value in having the open houses as an entree into the issues.
Okay, I can appreciate that. I would also suggest that we should have open houses scheduled in between our meetings, that we're actually having the regular Planning Commission workshops so that people, you know, would not just be coming here and making comments, but, you know, once they've heard what we have to say, rather than, you know, trying to find somebody to talk to about what went on, that there's a workshop, you know, public open house that allows them to then go and meet with the planners and the staff and say, well, what was this all about anyway? You know, what were they, you know, why are they doing this or why are they doing that? And how's that, you know, affect this or how's that affect that? Which we may not actually cover here, or they may not understand what we were talking about when we were talking about it. Because, like you said, this is a pretty esoteric document. And I might be pretty familiar with the lingo and the whole depth of it, but we really should make this as available to the general public if we want them to participate and give us feedback. And that's another question. We're talking about releasing us on the 31st. What are the plans for making the public aware that this is going on and this is going to happen? How much outreach is there, and what's the plans to do the outreach?
We did release a notice on Friday about the open houses and the new zoning ordinance release. So we did post that notice. We have our website, thegaletazoning.com. We also have a flyer that's going to be distributed. We were waiting for this meeting to get your feedback, so you won't look on the website and see any of the workshop dates because those are not locked in. We've been working collectively in City Hall, I'm not by myself here, to get some dates because there's other things in City Hall going on. So it gets pretty tight in scheduling public workshops. So there's some art to just getting dates. So that's in a way how we landed here as a starting point, but we're happy to make adjustments and move the workshops. I haven't heard from all of you, but it's totally reasonable to do workshops every week. We can do that. I mean, there'll be some weeks where we may not get a room, but it's, you know, if that's your will, we can do it that way without a problem. And then we can add in some open houses in between.
Do you have does anybody have a count on the email list for the zoning ordinance? Do we have I know we have a sign-up sheet at the city for, you know, interests and things. We also had a lot of people, you know, who made comments and came to open houses in the past. So do you have an email list? Do you know how many people are on it?
I don't have that number at my fingertips. I think it's our biggest list, aside from maybe, well, there's a couple other big lists. But it's a pretty hefty list, email list.
Good. So I would suggest that, you know, when you release the fact that the zoning ordinance is available, you can also say that this is a proposed schedule, because we can always change it, and with proper noticing, and we'll see what the public says. But it's just, you know, we've waited for a couple of years to get to this point. Right, and now it looks like we're just ramming it through, and I mean, I know it's a couple of months we're talking here, and you, for those who haven't been here before, zoning ordinance, I can just see the from what we had in the past. I'm just worried. That's all. You know, I'm just concerned for the public. I'm ready to do it, but I'm just concerned for the public and what their perception is going to be. So that's my comment.
Chair, we hear your comments, and we're very happy to have had this opportunity to get your feedback. That's why we wanted to roll this out to you. I think that we are struggling with trying to find the right balance of how to allow the time we need to give this the care and attention that it deserves, and at the same time not allow the process to get bogged down, because we do want to finally complete a process that has been going on for many years now, and so that's the challenge. But we hear you, and we will take a look at our schedule and take your comments into account, and break out the workshops so that we're not doing more than one a week, and so that we allow the time that's needed to get this done right. It's as imperative as it is to get this done and get this across the finish line, it's also equally imperative that we get it right,
yes,
and that we take the time we need to do that. Yes. So we are going to be flexible in the way we schedule this, and will, if we need more time on any given issue, if we're not able to satisfactorily address a topic on a given evening, we will schedule another workshop so that we can take the time. Yeah. At the same time, again, we want to move deliberately, and we want to move forward with due speed so that we have the end in sight and can hopefully get this whole package across the finish line.
And I'm confident that the Planning Commission will get this across the finish line. So whatever the schedule is, whatever the process is that we do, we will be here and we will see it through. I'm confident of that. So thank you. Oh, yeah, Commissioner Miller, please.
When I hear you talking about your concerns for the public, and then I think about myself, having never been through this process, I think I'm at the starting line at about the same place the public is. So I'm available on all these dates, with one little exception, but that week of February 25 just looks daunting to me. And trying to read, I guess I don't have a feel for what I need to read or what I will read for each of those evenings. I mean, if you put the whole zoning ordinance
4 inches
plus all the explanations, are we talking about a stack?
I mean, or
no.
Not well. You were going like this,
yeah.
So
yeah, right.
It was changing.
Okay,
so no, it wasn't. It's not this high.
Not that high. This high. Yeah. No.
RV ordinance alone had over 400 comment letters,
yeah,
and that was one section,
yeah,
of a chapter.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to go back and look at.
Kind of sounds like taking the bar exam again, where where you're working whatever 16 hours a day for a week. So anyway, I when I first saw this, I was kind of woo. I mean, I have read portions of the existing zoning code on an as-needed basis, but I have never read the whole code. So I will be reading this for the first time, and then when I hear that our two experienced commissioners possibly aren't going to be here, then I'm. That makes me even more concerned. So,
any other comments? Comment.
I'll just say, yes, that I do appreciate the thought process of having the key issues, or, you know, I'm sure staff and folks have had feedback about how to make these meetings effective and how we can move through that. So, you know, that it may unfold differently from the first round. So it at least in terms of feedback, as somebody who's new to this process, I'm open to staff's input on how kind of the structure of the meeting can be effective in getting through this material. But I share the general concern. I don't know quite what the happy medium is, but I do share the concern.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for your feedback, commissioners. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I just had one more.
Okay.
I just want to echo what Chair Fuller said about a document coming out right before the open house. Since we've already publicly announced the open houses, perhaps we could do at least one open house that's a little bit later in the process. Because at least for me, I find it helpful to maybe go through, find the chapters I'm interested in, at least read those chapters before I come and ask my questions. It's kind of like going to office hours for a faculty member and not having done the homework for the class. So it's a little, I think it's a little tough for me to have it coming out so quick, and I do really appreciate that comment. So I would like to recommend that we do that, and I really appreciate the willingness to go to one of these a week. We did one a week last time, and it worked okay. It was definitely a lot of work for us. It was definitely a lot of work for the public, but they stuck with us when we were doing one a week. So I think there's potential there. It's just the 4 weeks too much.
Can
Yep. Commissioner.
Can I add, will we be, maybe you said this and I missed it, but will we be holding additional Planning Commission meetings throughout this period? In other words, we ordinarily have scheduled the whatever the second, fourth Monday. Next one, I think, is February 11th. Will we be meeting on February 11th?
So, Chair and Commissioner Miller, we're going to keep our regularly scheduled PC meetings. So we'll keep to our regular schedule, and these workshops would be in addition to those meetings. And we would, to the extent we can, we want to make sure that we have dedicated time to the zoning ordinance. If we have nothing else scheduled on a regular PC date, we could use that date for a workshop, of course. So, I guess stepping back, we will take the comments we heard from you tonight. We heard you loud and clear, and we'll come back with a revised workshop schedule. We will also add in or make provision for additional open houses later in the process. So this first round of open houses that have already been noticed, we can treat them as, again, as an intro to the zoning ordinance. I think you will find as you get into the material that you will make it your own, that you will break it down, you'll develop a cognitive map of the zoning ordinance, and that what seems at first like an overwhelming mass of material will become much more familiar and much more, not transparent is the wrong word, but much more readable. It will make much more sense as we break it down. So whether we do that over a short span or we do that over a little bit longer span, hopefully that is what you'll get out of it. And I'm personally really looking forward to getting into some of these discussions because they're really wonderful substantive planning issues with, in some cases, challenging, but nonetheless, you know, very rewarding topics that really have a big impact. Like, I mean, the laundry list that Ann read, I can think of, you know, 12 off the top of my head that are really interesting, exciting topics.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Director. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wells. So comments from the planning commissioners.
I just want to say a huge thank you to Ms. Wells. I know we gave you some tough feedback tonight, but I hope you don't take it as anything personal. We're really thankful for all of your support and your hard work for the city. So thank you.
Anyone else?
I didn't say very much, but I totally agree with what you've brought up. And I was concerned, too, because it's a lot to take, and doing 4 days in a row would be too much. So thank you, guys.
Yeah. And the members of the public on the previous agenda item may have already left, but I just wanted to make the general comment that it seems to me that it wouldn't really be a historical context statement without the contributions of the indigenous people that have lived here for thousands of years. So as much as they're thanking us for putting their comments and information in the statement, it just doesn't seem like it would be a statement if it didn't have their contributions. And so we thank them for making their contributions.
And if I might add, I think Lisa's gone, but I wanted to compliment her. It was obvious that they much appreciated her the way she worked with them on this document, and I was touched to hear their comments as well. And I felt, you know, pride that the city of Goleta seems to be doing something at a different level than other cities have done. So,
motion to adjourn.
So moved.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Meeting adjourned.